Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Well, thank you to everybody for coming. This is the second instalment of the Downing Income and Growth How to Have Your Cake and Eat It presentation. Yesterday we focused on property-backed businesses, so how you can access income and growth whilst reducing your risk profile with an element of NAV backing. And today we're going to focus on cash-generative businesses, and I'm very fortunate to have Ian Fishwick from Adept Technologies here with me to talk about, give you an insight into his business, but also we'll move on to talk about one of the most important elements of investing, and that is the capital allocation decisions that managers have to make. So we have some slides. I won't dwell on the disclaimers. Of course, you've seen them before. Before we get into the companies themselves, I just wanted to highlight the market opportunity as we see it to smaller companies investors. So the reason we find this space so attractive, be it for strategic or small cap income investing, is because there is much more opportunity. So 10 times more businesses in this part of the market. That means that actually there's a lot of positions that are overlooked. And in fact, because of that, there's a much more inefficient element to this part of the market. So the average number of analysts per company at about half. At the very small end of things, that's fallen post MiFID II. And it means that for the diligent investor that's prepared to do their homework, there's the opportunity to gain an informational advantage over the wider market and our peer group. And of course, we know that there's much more value, so we can buy these businesses at much more attractive valuations than the FTSE 100 and some of the FTSE 250 businesses. So this is where we want to start our hunting for outperformance. Now, as an income investor, I think that, unsurprisingly, yield is quite important as well. And actually, we can see that perhaps contrary to common conception, that the yield is fairly consistent across market cap. So this means that there are actually some very cash generative businesses towards the smaller end of the market cap spectrum, and they are able to reinvest in their businesses to compound earnings and capital appreciation for shareholders, but also pay out an attractive dividend stream along the way. Now, one of these slightly larger companies in this space that's been doing this for a number of years is Discover IE. So they design and manufacture critical components, electronic components, that go into more defensive industries. And this has allowed them to grow rapidly through acquisition over time. So they have a very long designed in manufacture process. So they're designed into products for a long period of time, giving them good visibility going forward. And really, we can start to see some of the attractive elements that come through from this type of business. So earnings in blue, earnings per share, and then the dividend over time growing, giving you a very attractive kind of compounding in capital value. So 25% annualized since 2012, 372% capital gain. And your dividend will also have increased by 50%. So increasing your yield from 2.4 to 3.6. Yes, it's not the heady kind of 5, 6%, but if you're getting that level of capital appreciation and a very attractive dividend, then I think the total return story stacks up. So they've been very acquisitive, 15 acquisitions since 2010, and return on investments well above 15%, which is where we'd like to see them in terms for hitting our internal return requirements. There are a lot of parallels that we can draw between Discover IE, which is now just under 300 million in market capitalization, having started at 60 between Discovery and Adept, and we'll come on and touch on those in due course. But just to give you a quick summary, they focus on transportation, industrial connectivity, renewable energy, and medical segments. So very defensive, so not doing the commoditized distribution that the likes of Premier Farnell would have done. And it's very much a customized product. Through their acquisitions, they now have a global reach, meaning they're diversified across currencies, across geographies, and across sectors. And the acquisitions are performing very well. So you can see the acquisitions that have come through over time. And Ian will talk you through Adept's acquisition strategy and how actually, and in fact, those that will have seen Stephen English's conversation yesterday around the importance of having very strict criteria around acquisitions, we'll see that this is completely consistent with what he was saying. And actually, the return on investments that are being achieved are very attractive. Valuations within smaller companies, as we touched upon, much lower. This means that there's the opportunity for that multiple arbitrage. So with the likes of Discovery trading on kind of 12 to 14 times forward, they can buy businesses at five to six times, and then getting the benefit of that coming through. So you can, here's a bit more of an example of the actual product. So this is why I really like the components that they get involved with. And they are acquiring very intelligent, perhaps less commercial engineers, regional engineers across the world, really. So the key point is that these are critical components, but they're a very low element of the total construction cost or manufacturing cost of the end product. So with a wind turbine here, you can see that they manufacture the airflow measurement elements, pitch control, and some of the power elements there as well. These all cost very little, meaning that they have very good pricing power, meaning their margins are very much protected. And we've actually seen operating margin improvements over the years as they benefited from increased top line and the ability to push price increases through as well. Record customer order book giving about 1 year revenue visibility. So I think this is quite attractive, but it's not as attractive as Adept Technologies revenue visibility. Ian will touch upon the level of recurring revenue that they've been able to generate over time. But still, nonetheless, very attractive to have 1 year forward in a manufacturing business. And that kind of brings us nicely to Adept. You can see a lot of the same characteristics coming through. Ian starting with the market cap in 2012 there of about 10 million, having grown that up to 76 in 2019. So not the 300, but the compound growth rate is much more attractive than Discover IE, starting from a lower base. So 33% annualized, and you can see what's happened to the dividend along the way. Compound growth of 39%. So now your yield on cost would be 4%. Acquisition strategy as well. And I won't steal Ian's thunder, but what we really like about this business is the level of recurring revenue that comes through as the business has transitioned from fixed line communications towards managed services. So I will now let Ian tell you himself.
Well, the first bit is that market cap of 76 is now 86. Okay. Shall I sit down again? Was that enough? I'm a shareholder as well. I'm quite interested in this. Right. Okay. This is a presentation that our chief exec and an FD did very recently to some of the city guys. Right. The reason why I like this as a shareholder has never changed. Right. We're 16 years old. Right. I love recurring revenue. It's 80% recurring revenue, and we make 20% EBITDA on it. So it's profitable, and it's looked like that since day one. Okay. There's a big difference between businesses that make EBITDA and have no capex to ones that have EBITDA and then spend it all on capex and there's no cash left, right? And I think that kind of obvious thing is often really ignored, right? So I run the business on twos. One of the twos is capex must be under 2% of sales. I prefer it at one, okay? Cash conversion. First test of whether it's real or not is, does it turn to pounds and pence? You know, I grew up with Lord Weinstock at Marconi. You know, I am a cash is king man. That was my background. Okay. Free cash flow yield 5 to 8%. Doesn't matter whether you calculate it levered or unlevered. Just work that through on a share price. The share price should not be £3.60. It should not be. Right. Our friends at Downing said, let's have a look at not just tech, but the whole of AIM, because you guys have been growing for a long, long time. Amazingly, of just under 1,000 companies on AIM, there's only three that's grown earnings per share every single year for 9 years. We're almost nailed on to announce 10, because at the half year, we announced a 12% increase in EPS, okay? So it's very, very consistent. Right, so we started as a telecoms company. Then we went inside the building and we did unified comms, met all your devices, talk to each other, do your Wi-Fi. And then we said, while we're here, why don't we do IT and do the whole lot? Okay, so that's the strategic change we did. And it's both commercial, B2B, and it's public sector. And effectively all we're doing is the market overall is growing. So we're moving more and more into the bits that are growing. That's the basic concept, okay? What do I think of our market share? On the basis that it's 33 billion, I'd like some. You know, at 60 million, we still don't count. Right. I'm not going to bore you with all the techie buzzwords, but basically, it's getting very blurred these days as to what is telecoms and what's IT. Just keep it simple. What's Skype? Is that telecoms or is that a software app on your PC? You can't tell anymore, okay? So we do the whole thing, okay? So all the classic telephony, all linking all your devices together, all the network connectivity together, anything you want in data centers, either in our own data centers or access to Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS, whatever, all the various cloud bits where we can do hosted desktops, hosted, whatever you want to do, we can do it for you, right? We started very much in the southeast, and we've now gradually started to move. Since we did this one, I've announced another deal in Doncaster, so we've now done two very quickly in Yorkshire. And basically what I do is I build base camps in the southeast near where I live. Once we get our head round, how does this work, how do you make money out of it, then we start to expand the geography, okay? There's some amazing stats on here. I'll just do a couple. When some people talk about transformation, they mean we've changed the colour of the logo and put something else on the name. I don't mean things like that. I mean, when I say we've gone into IT, we web filter 1.3 billion images a day. That's serious IT. We have over 3,000 schools. We have the entirety of London's education system, right? Which means we've got over 1 million Office 365 users. It's the largest single deployment of Microsoft anywhere in Europe. Right, so some really interesting bits on here. Often you get people wandering in and saying, I've got a great idea for an app, we should be worth a fortune. We've got software designers developing apps, and we've got 2.2 million paid users of them. Right, so our original bit where we started, the calls and lines telecoms bit, is now only about a quarter of what we do. Right, and this is why I had to change the name from Adept Telecom to Adept Technology, because the speech was getting too confusing. You know, we're not a telecoms company, but I'll keep the name just to confuse you. So that's why I had to change it, okay? Right, public sector. We're in over 100 councils. The Houses of Parliament is ours, part of the Cabinet Office is ours. I've said 3,000 schools, over 20 universities, NHS trusts. Our big one at the moment is we're building the brand new data network for the whole of Kent. We're connecting 400 hospitals, GP surgeries, hospices, etc. So we also do 70% of all the private hospitals in London. There's probably a bit of medical insurance in this room. Everything that you would ever have heard of, Wellington, St. Thomas, One London Bridge, Harley Street, all of them are ours, right? Okay, so when the government said, I want a third of all spend to be with small and medium-sized businesses, we are one of the two or three who are leading that charge. And on Wednesday, I spent all day in Whitehall, the Cabinet Office, and I had to explain to them, I'm sorry, but we're now too big to be an SME, right? Because we've hit 60 million turnover and 300 people. Would you like me to stay? And they said, yes, because you're the only example in the room that's actually outgrown it, okay? But in terms of commercial, which is still two-thirds of what we do, there's some great names on here. Coca-Cola, Worldwide, Fidessa, ASOS, Sotheby's, TalkSport. There's loads and loads of them. Okay, so there's some very big, credible names on there now. Okay. All you need to know on here is we only partner with top-level Tier 1 people. And if you ask me who's missing on that list sat behind us, nobody obvious is the answer, I think. Right. Because we keep buying things and the part way through a year, we always have to get the analysts to try and explain to you what size are we now. So this was on a 56 million run rate. I then did another deal at the end of April. So it's 60 million now expected for FY20. Okay? And the graph has looked like that forever, basically. These were based on the half-year results. So the first bit is, it's the 16th consecutive year of half-year growth. We were profitable in year one. We've grown every single year since. I finally stood down as chief exec at Christmas, and I'm now 2 days a week chairman. And that was after I had 29 consecutive years of rising EBITDA, okay? Which wasn't. And the interesting bit here is, wherever we move through those businesses, we're keeping that model of 80% recurring revenue, 20, 21% EBITDA. That 27 million of senior debt at March is probably now around about 30 and a bit, getting towards 35, okay? The actual quantum of the debt is not the issue. It's the multiple compared to profitability. Think of it like a mortgage. It's not the size of your mortgage, it's the salary multiplier that's the worry, isn't it? This is the same thing. It's the EBITDA net debt ratio, right? So you can see it was at 2.4. What we try and do, I said at the start about twos. One of the twos is, clearly the day you do a deal, it'll peak. Don't let it go above about 2.6, then get it back under two as fast as you can. I could let this business run and just build up cash. But at 0.5% interest rate, £1 million in the bank will get me £400 a month. If I can't think of something better to do than that, this is why we keep going buying. Okay? You can see that path all the way through. So you've got to make sure it falls all the way down. So 12% increase, the EBITDA falls through as 12% increase in earnings per share. I must like that one because I quote on there twice. Right, okay. We're 16 years old. We didn't pay a dividend for the first 8 years, and a lot of our founder shareholders were still with us. So we said, we're going to have to start paying out. Right, okay. So we've had 8 consecutive years of double-digit dividend growth. So our objective is keep going with double-digit growth. Make sure, this is the third two, that your dividend cover is well above 2. It was sat at 3. Okay, so that tells you can continue doing it and it's safe. Okay, the yield, every time we try and push it into the 3-4% range, the share price goes up a bit and it pulls it back. So I'm not worried about that bit. Right. The basic policy is this. Make sure that your EBITDA turns into cash. Pay out a third of it to your shareholders. Put two-thirds of it back. But in doing so, make sure that it doesn't break those rules of it can't push your debt too high and it's got to be in line with where your EBITDA is growing. And that's why when you put these together, you're seeing both things. You're seeing, because we model everything that we do, we have an incredibly detailed model, right? I'll give you an idea how detailed we are. We reforecast this year and the year after every Monday morning. And some of you will know we've been doing that since the day we started, because we spend our life looking 18, 24 months out, okay? Right, so we did a deal in August in the southeast. We did another one in Yorkshire in November. We did another one in Doncaster in April. The shareholding, the directors, as you can see, and family are at 22%. Downing's at 12 and a bit now, right? We have a big family fund here, and then the normal coming down. Okay. Major point is, we've got serious skin in the game. Okay. The UK has a massive number of private tech companies. Way more than you think. There's over 1,000 of them, right? So when we say we keep going out and buying these things, it's not as though there's a little cake to go at. Okay. They're being set up as fast as we're buying them. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thanks, Ian. So I think there's some really useful points that Ian's made there that we'll come on and talk about after I go through another example of a dividend incubator that can give you income and growth, but is much smaller again. So Ian there, just shy of 100 million in market cap, Discover IE, 300 million in market cap. Interestingly, with Adept, the sell side broker has a £6 target price, I believe. Is that right?
That's the latest Cantor note, yeah.
That's the latest Cantor note. With Adept, you can see the level of inefficiency coming through. So Ian has talked about the acquisitions that he's done recently. The shares were trading at over £4 before those acquisitions came through. Those acquisitions will be accretive in year one and will have an impact on earnings, as we've seen, and as analysts have had to push their forecasts up. And yet the shares have now come back and it's trading below the level it was before those acquisitions. So the market really isn't appreciating the ability for these businesses to grow earnings and a dividend over time. And we see that across the piece, actually, this inefficiency coming through, and that's really where our opportunity lies. So just quickly before we move into the capital allocation conversation, the last smaller version of this I'll talk about is Ramsden's, recently listed in 2017. So diversified financial services provider, operating from 156 stores across the UK. Very defensive mix. It does foreign exchange. It does new and secondhand jewellery retail. But it also has some precious metals buying and some pawnbroking in there as well, all growing at an accelerated rate. But you can see the progression that we've already begun to see in this short period. 75% capital growth, 165% earnings growth, and the dividend starting from zero, admittedly, so the number quite high there. But the yield on cost, even over 2 years, at nearly 7%. So very attractive. Actually, we can go into the overview here. So I mean, you can start to get a bit of a flavor for some of the operations. They're very much focused in the north and in Wales and Scotland, which means that they don't really have any competition. It's very difficult to get an FCA license to provide these services, and as a single site operator, you simply don't have the scale to be able to afford that. But at the same time, the level of compliance that's being laid over the top of these type of businesses is only increasing and will only continue to increase. That has a significant cost that can only be absorbed by larger multiple site operators. So this is the strategy of Ramsden, so to drive growth from the core estate, expand the existing estate and grow their online presence. And the last has only just been touched upon. So a lot of kind of white space to move into there. With the growth from the existing, the FX business was growing at over 30% annualized over the last 5 years. Similar level of growth coming through in the jewelry side. And then attractive single-digit growth in the other two more defensive parts of the business. And a lot of that is being driven by word of mouth. They get a huge amount of repeat custom, which is quite an interesting thing. You wouldn't expect this type of business to get that. In fact, most people think it's a fish and chips operator, but fortunately a little bit different to that. I'm not sure we'd be there for cod and chips. But So refreshing the site, making it much more of a kind of retail style. But actually what we're seeing is as high street retail is starting to struggle, then Ramsden's is able to come and get more favourable terms with the landlord. So if anything, having a physical presence is a source of competitive advantage for Ramsden's. If you are in a position where you would need to access cash quickly, then being able to nip down the road and get it within a couple of hours, very attractive. So drive growth from the core estate, expand the existing estate through new site rollouts. Ramsden's are able to do this very well and at very low cost. It doesn't cost them very much to get into these sites. CapEx is very low. And actually what they've done most recently is buy 22 sites from the money shop. So this gives them a kind of injection of new sites to trade from. And our base case investment thesis was based on 6 new sites a year over 5 years. this acquisition hits our five-year target in basically 2 years. So they're already well ahead of where we thought they were going to be. Of course, our base case is designed or focused around achieving a 15% compound return over time. Now, Ramsdens have said that they will continue to roll out 12 new sites a year. That's their target. And there's plenty of space for them to go for. So you could certainly see a one-third to 50% increase in the estate over the medium term. Now, the great thing about the Ramsdens rollout strategy is that it takes a bit of time for these sites to bed in. So year one, you have about break-even, and then the contributions start to come through in years two and year three. Now, the analysts and consensus forecasts actually only go year one and year two. So all of that benefit is currently outside of market expectations. You have to do your own diligence to get to the point of understanding this. And then grow the online presence. We're all aware of online retail. Those that are interested in watches will see or will be aware of things like Watchfinder and Zoops. Ramsdens have one of the largest trading in second-hand watches, and the ability to trade these online is very attractive to them. This is only just beginning and will continue to grow over time. So this all means that they can continue to grow earnings, as Ian says, turn EBITDA into cash, and then that cash coverage allows the dividend to progress over time as well. So those are the three examples. We've had one a bit bigger, Ian, very successful with a long way to go, and then a kind of fledgling version of this dividend incubation coming through. But the conversation that I really wanted to get into, and I think Ian, we'll kind of talk through adapt as an example here, is that capital allocation piece. And this is really a test for Downing as a whole of management and their ability to allocate shareholder funds. So once we get through the operations of the business and we get down to free cash flow, management has to make that decision of what happens to that cash. And they have these options. Now, you can invest organically, but you have to have sufficient opportunity and you have to have the capacity to run those projects. You can also go through an M&A strategy, as Ian and Discovery have done. And there you have to be much more careful around very strict guidelines on acquisitions, pricing, synergies, etc. And then there are other elements as well. So achieving the right capital structure, so driving a very attractive weighted average cost of capital, which will allow you to outperform over the long term. And then the last two ways are ways of returning excess capital to shareholders. So Ian, why don't we talk about that balance between organic reinvestment and the M&A program? Obviously, you've been very acquisitive over the years. How do you balance pursuing that M&A expansion with reinvesting in the business?
First thing you need, to me, is a set of guidelines as to what you're trying to do. And then you need a very detailed financial model where you can measure, are you in there or not? So when I say, let's start off with the idea of we'll give a third to you as shareholders and put two-thirds back, you then got to be careful that when you're buying things, are you pushing your debt too high or not? Does the model work? Right. That's why the dividend cover is really key. So effectively, what we do is we look at lots of businesses before we buy them, but we model them, and particularly when you're doing earn-outs, we have payments up front and we have payments going back. So you've got to be very careful that you watch your cash flow and the timing of it. You can't guess this. You need to get used to working it over time, right? But at its simplest, if you can keep EBITDA growing in double digits, you should be able to keep your dividend growing in double digits as well.
And so when you're looking at an organic kind of reinvestment project, if you're looking at an IT spend, for example, which may drive efficiencies, how does that play off against, you might have an attractive deal that's on the horizon and then you're trying to maintain the dividend at the same time. So you want to have enough free cash flow for everything, but you have to make a decision as to what's a priority.
When we do a budget, our natural budgeting time is just before the financial year. So like January to March is when we do the budgets. And the budgets are always done as part of a three-year plan. And we'll get the guys to bring in the lists of what they want, because in a tech world, you do have to buy some things, right? But if we keep that basics of we don't really want it above £1 million. And we really want it somewhere around about 1% of sales, then we'll work very hard and just prioritise them down. Okay, so a lot of things that we do, we do remarkably cheaply.
Mm-hmm. And so with the M&A criteria then, do you have a hard ceiling as to what you won't pay or...?
Oh yeah, completely. It's in the market what we pay, and our deals have typically ended up being somewhere between 5 and 6.5 times EBITDA. If we pay more than that, there'd have to be a very, very, very good reason. But I'm also bothered, if we go for deals that are too big, then you're in danger of competing against the private equity guys, who do tend to have a habit of paying a little bit more than I would. Okay. That was very polite, wasn't it?
And so that 5 to 6 times translates into return on capital employed in excess of 15%. And that's what we're trying to achieve as a compound rate. So the M&A piece is very important. The debt allows you to do that, as you say, you know, cash or borrowing cash couldn't be cheaper.
Let's just say the M&A bit. I mean, I typically say that on average we buy one out of 12 businesses we look at, right? So it's almost more important that the 11 that you don't do, right? But on the way up, I was looking at the spreadsheet. I've looked at 24 businesses already in 2019, and I've only bought one. So it gives you an idea of, you know, how much time we spend looking at things and saying, no, no, no. And the no's are more important than the yes's in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm. And so when we look at making our investments into businesses, it's very much around the people and the corporate governance that we see within those investee companies. Do you have a similar approach with the management teams you're looking at when you're going through that M&A screening process?
Yeah, I mean, we're buying private businesses, so first bit is you've got to work out how many people own it and which ones are going to stay and which ones are not. And what happens if they change their mind? Because a lot of people will say, I'll stay, but stick 5 million in the pocket. They might have a think about it. And they've got somebody else yattering at them and saying, can we go on holiday? Right. So it does. That's the real world, right? So you need to be certain that there's very strong second level of management in what we're doing if you're going to keep that site open. But don't forget, we do two types of deals. We do economies of scale deals where we're very open and say, we're going to close your site and merge it into somewhere else. It doesn't matter then. But if it's ones where you need to keep that site open, then you do have to be very, very clear on that bit.
Mm. And just lastly, let's touch on share buybacks. I know this isn't something that is kind of front and centre, but have you ever considered it, given where the share price is and where the sell side research is indicating it should be?
We did a kind of test, but it must have been about 3 years ago when we did it. And one of the AIM rules, unless you get special dispensation, is you can only buy back an average of 50% of the volume that goes through in the previous 20 days, I think it is. When you're quite illiquid and you've got like 10, 20,000 shares being traded a day, what's the point of me trying to buy back 10,000 shares when I've got 23.7 million? You know what I mean? It's a bit pointless. But also, which is the better use of money? Is it to go and buy something, an acquisition with those characteristics, or do a buyback? I think it's the acquisition. But I physically can't buy enough to make any difference.
And it's, I think, you know, being able to reinvest and do that compounding, as we've said, is what we really like about Ian's approach to running Adept. Because he's very much focused on fundamentals, and his view and what we would like is that if you look after the fundamentals and the share price in time, although sometimes it feels like you're having to drag it kicking and screaming, will catch up ultimately. And so that's what we're looking for across the piece. We're nearly out of time. I hope that's been useful for you in terms of seeing that actually, you know, you can get access to a growing income stream and some very attractive capital appreciation in the small end of the market cap spectrum. We've got a couple more minutes, so if there are any questions, if you'd like to ask Ian anything, or if you'd like to ask anything about investing for income in smaller companies.
I was just wondering why you didn't release more of the large shareholdings you've got to make it a bit more liquid for other people.
That was exactly my question as well. Some way of getting more liquidity into the shares.
It is dead straightforward. If one of you wants to make an offer, then I'll put it to the family. it's a great theory, but you know, until somebody walks up and says, I've got a real offer, this is the price I've prepared to pay, then we carry on. We have gradually released over time. I mean, it was 29%, it's now down to about 17 or 18, isn't it? But you stick, I'm the same as you. Make the family a bid and they'll sell. Not a discount, by the way. When the share price is 360 and somebody's saying it should be £6, you know, be sensible about it. So there is liquidity if you want it.
What percentage did you hold on Ramsden?
So we hold approximately 15% across client funds. So it sits within our strategic investment trust. It sits within the Downing Monthly Income Fund. It sits in our open-ended structure as well.
The companies you're buying, you're buying very much people-driven companies, and how do you ensure that you're not ending up the staff aren't all going to leave and you're going to end up paying for the same thing again next week?
I think that's one of a great question, to be honest, because. If they all leave, you're in trouble straight away, aren't you? So what I've always taught people to do is do the opposite of what's expected. So for example, the day I arrive and we've bought you, I'll normally say, I'll give you 6 tickets to Wembley to go and watch whatever. You can sort out who goes. I'm doing it deliberately just to say, this is the type of business where the bosses don't take all the perks, we share them out. I'm just trying to make a point. So I'll deliberately do things like that straight away. This morning, all the various sites are raising money for charity, you know, so they can see, actually, you're working for somebody who does nice things. You got to love them to death. And what it's got to be fun, right? The key bit as well is, if the original owners ran it and they were always doing barbecues and whatever they did, do not make the mistake of taking that away.
Ian, James, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks so much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.